anything better for you.
Thank you for joining us. Welcome to the Board of Public Works annual bond sale. I want to thank the treasurer and the comptroller for welcoming me to their home again.
Yep.
Great to be back here at the Lewis Goldstein building. And it just reminds me of how many times I heard them say, God bless you all real good. So I'll say that to you this morning. God bless you all real good. 2 weeks ago, we were proud to announce that the bond houses once again reaffirmed Maryland's AAA bond rating. And all three agencies noted our state's sound budget policy, strong financial controls, and prudent debt management. In particular, they noted the steps that we here have taken at the Board of Public Works, where we came together in a bipartisan manner to make necessary adjustments to the budget. So I want to thank my colleagues, Comptroller Francho and Treasurer Kopp, and the DPW staff for all of their efforts. Maryland's AAA rating is a reflection of how we collaborate together with the Comptroller and the Treasurer's offices through the Bureau of Revenue Estimates and the Capital Debt Affordability Committee. Working together, we're prudent stewards of the taxpayers' money, and getting Maryland's fiscal house in order and responsibly managing taxpayer dollars continues to be our top priority here. Recently, the legislature's top fiscal analyst warned them to get real and to get real about continually spending more than we take in. Now, despite this warning from their expert, just in the past 60 days, members of the legislature have proposed more than $2 billion in new mandates or new forced spending increases over the next 4 years, which only stresses to me the need for continued fiscal vigilance, which is why our administration introduced the Common Sense Spending Act of 2017, which would put into practice the most common sense budgeting philosophy that the state shouldn't spend more than it takes in. If enacted by the legislature, beginning in fiscal year 2019, the state would not be required to fund any program or item that grew by more than 1% under revenue growth. This would ensure that spending growth is always less than revenue growth. This common sense proposal would exempt K-12 education funding and exempt debt payments. And I'm hopeful that the General Assembly can work with us in a bipartisan manner to enact meaningful common sense reforms. With that, I look to forward today to another very successful bond sale, and I want to especially thank Treasurer Kopp and her outstanding staff for all of their hard work in preparing and getting ready for today's bond sale. Madam Treasurer, thank you, and the floor is yours for any opening comments.
Thank you, Governor. Just to build on what you said, we couldn't have come to this point of a bond sale on behalf of the citizens of Maryland. We're going to be selling at least $650 million and presumably refunding about $400 million or more without the combined work and talents of the Comptroller's Office, the Department of Budget and Management, the Treasurer's Office, and the legislature working together to not only make sure the revenue are projected correctly, that debt is projected correctly, but that we are all working together facing the rating agencies and the investors and the people of the state of Maryland. And out of that will come a bond sale that devotes more than 60% of the funds to public education, to schools, community colleges, higher ed, and the basic public facilities that we use to house the services for the people of the state of Maryland. So we're looking forward to a good sale and good participation. I would be remiss, Governor, if I didn't point out that today is International Women's Day.
Good.
And since I know both the Comptroller and you are have many women surrounding you and helping and at times directing, which is
absolutely
a very appropriate thing, I would like to
say... At times directing. It's pretty much all the time.
this on behalf of the Board of Public Works to the people of the state of Maryland and to our colleagues in state government, but most particularly the women. I was asked what would the difference be today if the women were not here, and I would say we could not sell the bonds. We could not do the bonds. There are a lot of things, and Maryland's very fortunate because we have really significant participation in our economy and society of strong women. That's not true everywhere. As has been said often, women and girls are the uncompleted agenda of the 21st century. And without dedicating attention and support, the economy will not thrive. So I think it's good to stop and take a reckoning every once in a while.
Absolutely, and thank you for bringing that up. Mr. Comptroller.
Thank you, Governor, and I couldn't agree more with your comments and the comments of the Treasurer. And Governor, if I could, I just wanted to remark how much of a pleasure it was to join you last Friday at the Maryland Tourism Day kickoff event down the street for the first ever Maryland Wine Month. Funny thing, all of our staff showed up too. But these events highlighted and celebrated the hard work, level of innovation and entrepreneurship and vital economic role that the state's tourism and wine industries play. It was especially humbling, frankly, for me to receive the prestigious Tourism Advocate Award from the Maryland Tourism Coalition with you, Governor. The Governor gets lots of things like that, but the comptroller is kind of back in the sidelines there, and I really appreciated being able to personally thank Governor Hogan for, I guess it was the school after Labor Day, not to pick up a controversial subject, but I was very, very humbled and privileged and honored to be there with the governor and receive that award. As the state's chief fiscal officer, it would be difficult to overstate the invaluable contributions that the tourism industry and the wine industry make to our local communities and to Maryland's economy. Tourism industry supports nearly 150,000 family-supporting, good-paying jobs and generates more than $14 billion in economic activity, more than $2 billion in state and local tax revenues. And our burgeoning wine industry, along with our thriving microbrewery and microdistillery industries, all of which I regulate and I have to do frequent site visits to, they represent thousands of jobs and millions of dollars in economic activity. And they're emblematic of the innovation and the entrepreneurship that remain our state's most valuable economic resource. Each and every day, Maryland winemakers, brewers, and distillers are producing high-quality, award-winning products that attract thousands of visitors to our state every year. And I continue to be proud and grateful for the close, collaborative relationship that my agency shares with these industries. In the years ahead, I hope the state will continue to support these three wonderful, burgeoning, new sectors and continue to appreciate and celebrate their many contributions that strengthen our state's economy and our local communities. And speaking of strengthening our state's economy, I just want to thank the governor for advocating a timeout on tax increases and fee increases, because it is the stability and predictability that represents that I think is particularly important for our state's economy. What we need right now is moderation, not surprises. And I'm picking on what the governor said earlier in his comments, and I'm applauding the fact that we now have a much more moderate approach to fee increases and tax increases, and that is what the private sector needs. Thank you, Governor, and thank you, Treasurer, and
thank you, Mr. Comptroller, and thanks for bringing up the tourism award. We shared the award, but he actually gave us each one, so we didn't have to cut it in half.
Right.
But it's really, I want to thank you for your leadership on the school after Labor Day. On thanks for mentioning the breweries, the distilleries, and the wineries, which are really growing by leaps and bounds in the state.
We were at the winery thing on Friday and talking about we went from 13 wineries in Maryland a decade ago to 90 of them. The comptroller in his remarks said, we've gone to 76 wineries. And I said, wait a second, there's like 14 of you that are not paying taxes because the comptroller doesn't know about it. So now everybody, we found them all. I'm going to sample the wine at all 14 of the new ones, and the comptroller's going to go find some tax revenues.
But, Governor, could I just build on two things for a second? One is, you may recall, it was probably about 5 years ago when the rating agencies came to Maryland, and we had a dinner at the governor's house and served Maryland wine. And they weren't sure as we started to serve it and talked about it. And by the time they, and I'm not saying that's why we got the AAA rating. And the other thing I meant to mention in connection with International Women's Day is that Delegate Sheila Hickson of District 20 was honored by the Women's Caucus today. In honor of more than 40 years of great service and more to come, and all of the accomplishments on behalf of the legislature, the District 20, and the state. And I know the comptroller would be particularly interested as a former district mate. So I'd like to go to posterity, go down for posterity that today was dedicated to Delegate Hickson.
Thank you. Well, let me just wrap up all of that. Women's Day, wine, before we get to work. My wife was had the incredible honor of having one of her works of art installed at the National Women's Museum of Art in Washington, which has got incredible art by women from around the world for centuries. And I sat next to this, I can't think of her name right now, but a world-renowned wine expert.
Oh, wow.
Who said to me, the Maryland wines, the quality level has gone up so much. And she was talking about, I'm not really a wine expert, but the Maryland wines weren't that great at first, and now they're really, really good. So everybody go out and spend some. Quick reminder before we get started with the Secretary's agenda that this bond sale process will be interrupting us wherever we are in the process. So some of you may get cut off in the middle of your presentations in order for us to vote on the resolutions from the treasurer to approve the bond sale.
Could I say also that the we're going to run the sale today with the taxable and refunding bonds being picked up next door, the numbers and stuff. Then at 5 of 11 or so, we will start doing the major the tax-exempt sale, and the folks will come in, our staff and advisors, to run off the numbers and...
Very good. It'll be exciting. But thank you for your patience.
Hold your breath.
We don't want to be rude if we cut you off in mid-sentence. So let's go ahead and get started with the Secretary's agenda.
Good morning, Secretary McConnell. Madam Secretary, we have 16 items on the Secretary's agenda. We have 3 reports of more than 2%. We are withdrawing item 14. We are going to hold item 1. That's the Treasurer's bond sale, so the Treasurer says it's time to take that one back up. I would like to point out that we are honored today on item 12 with Dr. David Wilson, the president of Morgan State University. So perhaps he can come up and talk about item 12.
Absolutely. We have Dr. David Wilson here from Morgan State University for item 12. Welcome, Dr. Wilson. I understand you have kind of a significant announcement on a naming for your new student services building, and we'd love to hear about that this morning.
Thank you very much, Governor, and we do. First of all, good morning to you, Governor Hogan, to Treasurer Kopp, and Comptroller Frenchel. I'm really pleased to come before you today to seek the approval of the Board of Public Works to name a facility on the Morgan campus, the Calvin and Tina Tyler Hall. Calvin and Tina Tyler are outstanding native Marylanders. They are outstanding native Baltimoreans. They both grew up in Baltimore City, Calvin and Tina, on the west side of Baltimore. Calvin came from a very challenged family on the west side of Baltimore, but in the late 60s made his way to Morgan State University to major in business. During his junior year, he ran out of money and took a job with UPS and became a delivery person at UPS. And one thing led to another, and promotion after promotion came, that he stayed with that career, and several years ago retired from UPS, as executive vice president of UPS. But he never, ever forgot his roots in West Baltimore. He never forgot his start at Morgan State University. And he has endowed a $5 million scholarship program at Morgan State University that is targeted toward Baltimore City young people who would like to come to Morgan and pursue their college degrees. And it is a full scholarship for those individuals. One thing that I really admire about Calvin and Tina Tyler is that they did not set the criteria for the scholarship only for those students who are the elite performers. The minimum grade point average is 2.5, and they wanted us to put in place a system where we are assessing leadership potential, stick-to-itiveness, grit, determination, and those types of characteristics, if you will, not just the SAT score. And so we are delighted that scores of young people from Baltimore City have taken advantage of these scholarships and have gone on to graduate. And so with that in mind, the new facility that is coming online is scheduled to open in 2020, and it will house programs at Morgan in recruitment, in enrollment management, the bursar's office, the comptroller's office, if you will, all those functions, keeping, of course, what the purpose of this building is in mind and connecting very well to the generosity of Calvin and Tina Tyler. And so with that in mind, we bring forward for your approval the naming of the new Student Services Support Building at Morgan, Calvin and Tina Tyler Hall. I'll be more than happy to respond to any questions you have.
Well, first of all, thank you. That's it sounds like a perfect naming to me, and the program sounds incredible, and help folks that are not just the A students, but the ones that have the drive and the determination to, sounds like perfect person to have it named after, because that sounds like his life, Calvin's life, was exactly what we're talking about.
Any comments on this?
Are they still with us?
Yes, and so they reside in Las Vegas, but they are back here regularly. He just lost his father and one of his sons, but they are back here in Baltimore quite frequently and spend some significant time in the city when they do return.
Excellent.
Governor, I'm sure Mr. and Mrs. Tyler don't recall, but they were here several years ago with a couple of Tyler students. Outstanding young people and outstanding benefactors, too. Mrs. Tyler was there all the way, all along, as I recall, making 10 or 12 moves over the years, raising children all over the country, but rising in UPS all along the way, and the model that they set for all of us, thinking about what is really important, endowing the education and the future, was really brought home most directly simply by meeting and talking and meeting those students. So I think this is a great proposal and ought to be an inspiration and pointed to as a model for all the rest of us.
We certainly look forward to introducing them to you if you have not met them, because Secretary Cobb, they are also two of the most selfie-facing people I have met in my entire career. And so this is almost embarrassing to them, but it is a great inspiration for our students in Baltimore City to walk the campus, look up, and see a name of someone who came from a community that is challenged and instilled in them desire and aspiration and motivation, all aimed at high achievement.
Well, Dr. Wilson, thank you so much for joining us today, and thank you for bringing this item before us and for the great job you're doing at Morgan State.
Thank you very much, Governor. Appreciate
the
support of the state.
By the way, Doctor, about five of your students were down here last week. Business students going around, watching the legislature, meeting people in the executive branch, making a very great impression on everyone they met. And I congratulate you on having some outstanding representatives.
Should we do this item separately?
Yeah. I'd like to move approval on item 12.
3-0.
Oh, yeah. Thank you.
All the best.
Thank you. I hope it's as easy as the next time I come. thank you very much.
We're off to a good start. I'd like to... highlight item 10. This item from the Maryland Department of the Environment.
Department of the Environment, the Back River Wastewater Treatment Plant.
Good morning.
Good morning. Wastewater treatment is not my particular area of expertise, so if you have some specific questions about that, I have Waleed Safouri with me.
I'm actually not even going to have any tough questions. I just wanted to highlight this, and thank you for putting the item on here. This is a request for approval for $4 million for the enhanced nutrient removal upgrade project at the Back River Wastewater Treatment Plant in Baltimore County. Department of Natural Resources has concluded that nutrient pollution from the Back River plant is the likely cause of the midge infestation in the Back River area of Baltimore County. I see we have a senator from that district here as well, if he wants to come forward. We have received numerous complaints from residents and business owners about this midge problem. The midge infestation is so bad that it's affecting marinas and outdoor seating restaurants, activities at the local senior center. And the county really has responsibility for this problem, but has continually refused to do anything about it and has ignored the pleas of the people of Baltimore County. Last year, we even offered to have the state contribute half of the cost of remediation. However, they refused our offer. Despite the county's refusal to act, we have decided to move forward anyway. And by providing funding for 5 applications to treat 750 acres in the Back River area in order to provide a measure of relief to residents and businesses in the area prior to the next boating and tourism season. And we are hopeful that the county will see fit to join in and add additional county funding as well. Senator, do you have any?
I could. Thank you so much. Thank you, Governor, Comptroller, and Treasurer, for this opportunity to speak on this. I tell you, this is something that's been a fight with this major problem, because now it has expanded itself, not just in my district, but in the neighboring district with our good minority leader, Senator Jennings. And we've talked briefly with your staff that have been unbelievable with us. They have worked with us countless times to see what we could do, as you stated, Governor. We've tried to meet with our leadership in our county and tried to work with them as much as we could. But I want to thank all the delegates, the senators, your staff, your secretaries have been kind to us and have given us above and beyond their time. And we believe that this step would do a great thing for small businesses, for major businesses, for businesses to be, and for our residents, and it would help them out. This has been an ongoing problem, but we've seen it's picked up momentum. And I think with these measures, we'll see a good thing happening, and we'll see people that are going to finally say, not just it's about time, but thank you very much for this step that you're taking to make a difference in our community, because I believe in time it would have been so much more of a mess as it is now. And again, I cannot thank you enough. I found out this, and my delegates, Senator Jennings, his delegates, and myself, want to say very much so, thank you from our heart for this opportunity.
Thank you, Senator. We want to thank you and all of both delegations from both districts, because you guys have been tireless in trying to get the citizens some relief. So we appreciate you. Yes. You're pushing it. Sorry that we didn't get help from the county, but thanks for staying on top of us to make sure that we were able to do something. Appreciate your kind words about our administration.
And the Back River Restoration, as we've met Sam Weaver and the others and the leadership there, have been a force with this. They've had some great information and a great help, too, with your staff and with everyone. So, again, we want to thank you very much.
Thank you. Any other comments?
I've never even heard of midges until this came up, but I understand it's an enormous nuisance.
Yes, sir.
And only Baltimore County leadership could make this into a partisan issue.
Yes.
Really.
Yes.
I mean, you can't get rid of a tsunami of bugs that are harassing your own citizens and your own businesses. And
yes,
so thank you for you and your colleagues for bringing this issue, and thanks to the governor for doing what the county should have done long ago.
Thanks, sir.
And any questions?
Yes, I do, now that you're on this item. And I think, I don't know, Senator, if it's for you or Ms. Buell, is this the project that is recycling methane?
It's not. This is to remove the nitrogen and phosphorus from the liquid.
And that's then
water.
What? So this is not.
No, it's not related.
Power, which is
correct. It's not.
What is the project? It is.
The project is to upgrade the treatment plant to achieve nitrogen level of 3 milligram per liter and phosphorus of 0.3 as part of the bay restoration to reduce nutrients being discharged to the Chesapeake Bay.
All right, then we were misinformed, I think.
You're also asking if it's not this plant, you're wondering which one.
Yeah.
Which one is recycling methane?
Yeah.
Yes. This is the same. But
This is the same.
Yeah, I thought you were asking about the project.
Right.
Yeah, this is the same plant that actually converting the sludge, extracting methane gas, and using it for cogeneration, power, and
exactly.
Heat.
Yeah,
yes.
Yeah.
Different project at the same time.
Yeah,
the same
yes,
plant. So
yes, same plant.
Really
I'm sorry.
Is that going smoothly and as anticipated?
Yes, actually, we have another phase of the project that we may be coming soon for that to add additional units to generate more energy.
Super.
Yes.
Great. Thank you. Sounds like
okay.
Great.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
All right.
I have one last question on the Secretary's agenda. That's emergency report A1.
Is that a report from the Department of Human Resources? I know the Secretary is here. I believe he's going to answer your question. This report is a modification to an emergency contract that you saw last November, and this is to add 3 children to a contract.
Yeah. Thank you for being here, Mr. James. This is an emergency report from the Department of Human Resources placing 3 Maryland children at the Judge Rothenberg Center in Massachusetts. Is that correct?
Yes, Governor.
And the department has placed 6 other youth at this facility under the contract since September of last year. Is that
we currently have 5 youth placed there.
So it's come to our attention that in December, staff at the Judge Rothenberg Center were arrested for assaulting and spitting on a student. And exactly 1 month ago, you appeared before this board to answer similar questions about placements at a facility owned in Florida by the company we severed all ties with due to the tragic death of a Maryland child in their Delaware facility. But we understand that the department recently restructured this unit that monitors and makes out-of-state placements to ensure that these facilities meet the highest quality standards. Yet again, we have this case a month later with similar questions about Maryland kids being placed in facilities that are having problems. It doesn't appear that this Rothenberg Center meets the standards that you laid out for us last month. And so I'd just like to give you the opportunity to explain why these children had to be placed in this facility and what you can do or what we are trying to do to stand up a facility in Maryland that can adequately care for these very difficult children.
And could I, and what you are doing as long as our children are placed there to supervise and make sure that they are treated appropriately.
Yeah.
Thank you, Governor, Madam Treasurer. As with the item that we discussed when I appeared before you last month in terms of placements out of state, any out of state placement is always a last resort for our department. Before any child is placed out of state, we exhaust every in-state resource. And by exhaust, I don't mean that we simply ask them. We have followed up on multiple occasions with all of our in-state providers and said, what would it take for you to be able to serve this child in Maryland? And the answer that we have consistently gotten back is
our existing programs at the time when we were making these placement decisions simply felt that they could not safely serve that child, taking into account the safety of that child, the staff, and the other children and the other youth in those programs. Only after we've exhausted all those in-state options do we begin to look at programs elsewhere in the
country.
And these
are just particularly troubled kids that are not a normal placement.
The youth that in most cases are out-of-state placements, we're dealing with a population largely with significant developmental disabilities or on the more extreme end of the autism spectrum disorders, or for other medical reasons have significantly low IQ and cognitive abilities, coupled with extremely aggressive behavior, a tendency to very significant emotional outbreaks, which frequently require multiple staff members to safely de-escalate the youth and to safely manage that youth's behavior. These are youth who are also self-injurious at times and in some cases have had multiple suicide attempts. So these are really the most difficult cases to secure placements for. There are limited placement options throughout the country for these youth. And the decision to place these youth at this program was not an easy one. It was one that we were not particularly comfortable with. And as part of that, we also very specifically met with the staff and the leadership at that department at this program and discussed what is allowable with regard to Maryland youth and what is not. We have specific provisions in our contracts that prohibit the use of certain behavior management approaches, and we have regularly followed up with that program. In addition, we've also met with the licensing authorities in Massachusetts and have regular conversations with them to ensure that this program is still in good standing and there have not been other incidents there. So we're not seeing a pattern of incidents occurring there. That being said, several months ago, we began a process of working to try and stand up programs. We had identified that there was this cohort of youth, and there are enough of them that we believe we should be able to establish and maintain programs in Maryland to be able to serve these youth. So we've been working through that process. But as we've continued to see the need for out-of-state placements, we've determined that that process is simply taking too long. It will take us too long to get to the place where we have an in-state option for serving these youth. So we have now engaged with the Department of Health and Mental Hygiene, specifically the Mental Health Administration and Developmental Disabilities Administration, as well as the Governor's Office for Children and the Department of Disabilities, to work on an emergency basis attempting to establish an in-state option so that we are not forced into making very difficult and very troubling decisions about these placements going forward.
Thank you, Mr. James. I it's a difficult situation that you're in. I want to thank you for the way you answered the question, and I congratulate the department on moving fast to address the problem with both a short-term fix and a potential long-term fix. But just like you are, I'm not pleased with the fact that we had to send these kids to this institution in the first place. And I'd like to make a motion that the Board of Public Works finds this emergency report unsatisfactory and remands the report back to the Department of Human Resources, and that the department should report back to us in 2 weeks to update us on the progress in addressing this issue.
Be happy.
Second for that motion.
Second. I also would like to make a comment.
Yeah, no,
the treasurer and I are here.
I didn't
with
give you a chance to make comments or questions.
Well, I'm in complete agreement with your comments, Governor, because a month ago you were standing here in response to a question from me, and I quote, "I assure you we are absolutely aware we have recently restructured the unit that monitors and makes our out-of-state placements to enhance our monitoring of these programs, ensure they meet the highest quality standards." And I appreciate your comments today, but I'm pretty challenged to believe them because, a month ago you presented to us single source contracts for five out-of-state residential care service providers for a total of $9 million over 5 years with extensions. And I raised serious concerns a month ago that recently employees at two of the five companies were involved in alleged abuses and assault of these children with severe mental and behavioral challenges. And I asked you whether you were taking the necessary level of vetting and scrutiny to ensure the health and safety of vulnerable children in these out-of-state facilities, and you came back and said, absolutely, we are. And there I was, raising my concerns. I reluctantly voted to approve the contracts based on your assurance that these situations were being carefully vetted in the best interest of each child. Specifically, I think one of two providers currently had no placements. The other one had one Maryland youth. So it now is very apparent that the two facilities we discussed at the last meeting were not the only ones that had reported incidents of abuse. That includes the facility we're discussing now, the Judge Rottenberg Educational Center. And I completely concur with the concerns of the governor and happy to support his motion. But that center, we had just placed three children between September and November. And then you granted a 2-year contract in January of this year. So in December of 2016, before you granted an extension, two employees of the center were charged with multiple counts of assault and battery, a disabled person. The governor mentioned the video. So, unless I'm mistaken, the department had placed children at this facility on an emergency contract within a couple of months of that. This reported abuse takes place. Maryland Children have in place. Despite that, you come before this board and request a long-term contract with this company. So, were you aware of those incidents? Is there a reason why you didn't think it was appropriate to inform the Board of Public Works of these issues before asking us to vote to put children in the care individuals apparently charged with reprehensible behavior? We didn't know it. Did you?
Mr. Treasurer, I am sorry if I did not. Mr. Comptroller. I am very sorry for not highlighting the issues with this program when we met with you and appeared before you to discuss the other programs. At that time, I was not aware of the December incident with this particular program. Let me also add, in terms of what we are doing right now for the children who are there, we have caseworkers visiting this program every week to visit both their children and to check on the status of every other Maryland child at this program. And today, as we speak, our Director of Out-of-Home Placement and Permanency is visiting this program on a previously scheduled visit to review the entire program. That is an additional level of scrutiny that we are applying to this program because of the concerns that this board has raised and that our department has about ensuring the safety of our children placed there. Those are interim steps that we are taking. So it was scheduled for us, but it is an unscheduled and unannounced visit to the program. We strongly believe that the best visits for those contract monitoring visits should be unscheduled because we want to get as objective a picture as possible when we visit.
And so you were in the position where we had no ability to take care of these kids here yet. And there's no other providers to turn to. And so even knowing some of the issues, you had to place them there with these additional precautions.
Yes, Governor. That is absolutely the situation we found ourselves in when the local departments and the clinicians reviewed the case file and looked at the options before them. This was the option that they believed would meet the needs of that child at that time.
No, I understand. It's a difficult issue, and the governor is obviously very sensitive to the challenges that everyone faces here. But there were videos in December of people spitting and beating on kids. They weren't our kids, thank God, but they were kids at this facility. And, you know, in a certain sense, it's out of sight, out of mind when they're off in some other state. Well, they're out of sight, but they're in my mind, so I'm going to ask you to bring these three kids back and bring back the five other kids.
Absolutely.
They're up there. Bring them back. And I do not buy this argument that with all of the wealth and resources that our state has, and Hopkins and Maryland, Kennedy Krieger, and all these unbelievable facilities all around the state, that you can't take $1 million and set something up right now for these kids and bring them back.
Well, they are working on doing just that, but it can't happen instantaneously. That's the issue. Bringing them back now, we have nowhere to put them.
Well, bring them back a lot faster than the normal process of, you know, consulting with the existing groups. Go and create a new group if you have to.
Well, that is what's going on, and we'll have a report back here in 2 weeks about the status of the new program that you're standing up. Right,
it's
and
going.
The time frames that you anticipate.
And I'm very obviously sympathetic to the governor's concerns here. I'm not. This is your
concern is for the kids.
At every board meeting, I'm going to ask you or whoever's standing in for you, where are the eight kids? Are they back here?
Got
to bring them back.
I will be happy to appear before you every 2 weeks and give you a regular update on the status of our activities and standing up a program in Maryland to bring those kids back. And our goal ultimately is to establish sufficient resources in Maryland to bring back as many out-of-state youth as possible. We've already moved from having roughly 60 out-of-state youth at this time last year down to 37. We need to bring that number down much further, and I think we can. But the immediate need is to stand up a program within the next 6 to 8 weeks, we hope, to be able to bring these youth back to Maryland. And that's
good.
That's our immediate timeline for trying to address this particular
And you're going to try to
program.
Bring all 37 back.
We're going to try and bring back as many of the 37 as possible. We think that's a significant number. There are a handful that have very distinct behavioral needs that if it's one youth in Maryland who has that particular need, it would be very difficult to sustain an entire program around that youth. But that, we believe, should be the exception. When there's a cohort of five or eight youth, that should be sufficient for us to establish a program in Maryland to address their needs, and that's what our department is committed to doing.
Good, and I want to give kudos to the governor because I've been here before when there were as a different governor, and there was a much different approach, which was, hey, first let's make sure nobody can criticize what we're doing, and then maybe we'll work something out. But it never apparently got worked out because this is not a new issue. And I'm not upset with you. I'm just saying it's not a new issue.
And, come forward.
It actually,
I'm upset with
it actually looks like this is going to be resolved in a way which protects these kids. And I'm much more comfortable knowing they're going to be brought back than I am in having some hearings and investigations and this, that, and the other thing. Let's just bring them back because we know we can take better care of them than possibly these other out-of-state facilities. So
again, I want to thank you for standing here and taking all that heat, and also for being on top of the situation and coming up with short-term and long-term solutions. And there's a if you have any other questions, there's a motion on the floor that you report back to us in 2 weeks, and maybe we'll get a little more detail on the plan that we're going to be standing up. And it's been motioned and seconded. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Three no.
Thank you,
sir.
Governor.
Thank you.
Are there any other questions on the balance of the Secretary's agenda?
Governor, we just note that Dr. Langley, the archaeology item, had underwater archaeology item, had provided materials that given to your staff members to address the Maryland Maritime.
Great.
Okay.
Thank
Good.
You. Is there a motion?
Move approval.
Second. 3-0 on the balance of the Secretary's agenda. We're going to move on to the DNR. Oh, yeah. What, is it 5 minutes
left? We're coming in at 5:11. Our clock is fast.
Yeah. Clock is
fast?
Yeah, the
oh,
clock
okay.
is. Better look at our, we better look at our phones. Oh, yeah, we have 9 minutes. Okay, DNR real property agenda. Secretary Belton.
Good morning, Governor. Matt, the Treasurer, Comptroller, Alan West Belton, Secretary of the Maryland Department of Resources. We have 6 items on our real property agenda for your approval this morning.
Any questions on DNR? Is there a motion?
Move approval.
Second. 3-0. Up next, Secretary Brinkley, EVM.
Good morning, Governor, Mr. Comptroller, and Treasurer. For the record, David Brinkley, Secretary of Department of Budget Management. We have 6 items on today's agenda. I have people here to address any questions that they have. And item 6S is a supplemental item.
Questions on Department of Business and Management? Yes, sir.
Item 2S.
Item 2S to the Department of the Environment, Christy Michael, Deputy State Superintendent for Finance and Administration. I hope I pronounced your name correctly this time.
I didn't hear you say.
I can't go on.
Good morning. My name is Christy Michael. I'm the Deputy Superintendent for Finance at the State Department of Education. We're here today to request your approval of a contract for our high school assessments for government and science. And I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Sure. No, I got a lot of questions because, there's a generic issue of testing, and specifically I have concerns about testing for government. I'm happy to test, I guess, people from time to time, but remember some time ago asking that the school system in the state of Maryland teach financial literacy to people. The one thing that all of our kids need, everybody needs it. Oh, no, that we don't have time for that. That's, we got to teach and measure this. What is it? Government? Oh, okay, great. So we're going to pay $56 million. To an out-of-state company, a for-profit company, measured progress up in Dover, New Hampshire, for development and administration of high school assessments in government. Oh, and I see science, too, but apparently they're just going to use last year's science exam. With additional pricing options for artificial intelligence scoring, that's a new one. We're going to have robots testing our, evaluating our tests. So you're asking us to vote for $56 million. Last September, you were before the board for yet another extension for services included in this contract. I voted against that extension. It is a very long string of extensions of a contract that started all the way back in 2007 and was supposed to expire in 2012. The time we were told the extension was necessary to make sure there was no disruption to the January 2018 HSA and that you anticipated coming back with the procurement in November of last year at the latest December. So now it's March. Let me just ask, is what was the cause of the delay of several months?
So first, can I address some of your other concerns?
Well, I've got some specific questions,
okay,
so let's
certainly.
Deal with those if I could, and then you can come back and answer the larger concern. But in last year, you said you were really hard-pressed for time and that you were concerned the test items were not going to be developed in time for Maryland educators to be able to review the test items for content bias and sensitivity. And all of a sudden, here we are not at November, December. We're in March.
Sure. And the reason we requested that extension was twofold. One was because we wanted to make sure we had an assessment available for the January administration. And two, we were concerned that compressing the time frame to do a procurement based on delays we had in the previous year would limit the number of vendors that could bid. And we, in order to do a fair and competitive process, we wanted a little bit more time so that more vendors could participate in that procurement. And we did receive 3 bids. And based on that competitive procurement, we do feel like we're going to save a considerable amount of money based on the competition that was enabled by that extension. So, again, we do thank you for granting that extension the last time I was here discussing the HSA assessments. We are on track to have our assessments ready for the January 2018 administration.
Okay. And apparently Maryland teachers look upon the extra work that they normally get and are paid for as far as evaluating the test and scoring the test, they generally participate in that. Is that what Maryland, is that what Measured Progress, this new for-profit company in New Hampshire, are they going to be employing Maryland teachers to score these tests? Or
okay, we're going to have to cut it off right now into this. We're saved by the bell because I think we have... But we'll come back.
Okay. Apologize, everybody. So we have already taken bids for the refunding sale and the taxable portion. I can tell you our preliminary numbers on the taxable, we got a rate of 2.02%, which is about 10 basis points better than we were hoping for. On the refunding, we also got about 10 basis points better than we were hoping for. We got 1.72, and our preliminary estimates, so we got about $21.7 million in net present value savings. It's a total of 4.4% savings. So, looking like we have a good sale. So, we're going to pull up the screens here. Well, I'll show you first. We've got four bidders signed up for the new money tax exempt, JP Morgan, Bank of America, Morgan Stanley, and Citigroup, which are the four that we would expect. Yes, got a couple of minutes. While we wait, I'll show you Bank of America was the winner of the refund. And on the taxable, Raymond James, pardon me, Wells Fargo was the winner on the taxable.
Almost finished controllers.
Jeez, shut up. Normally I'm just asked to keep talking, but it's okay.
Did a good job.
But they have time to work on their answers.
It's good.
Oh, you got a bid. It's a little early. Bank of America is in. Like I said, they won the refunding. Very competitive rate.
There was only one bid?
We still got a minute left. So,
oh, okay.
And we can't see the numbers until everybody is in. Maybe they took those dates or something.
I was wondering what would happen. They
changed their mind. Yep. Oh, there we go. All right. Bank of America's back. We still like it. There's Morgan Stanley. Okay, good deal. So we got all four bids. Good bids. Okay, everybody's in. We'll check the results. 2.83. Bank of America looks like the winner. Preliminarily right now it's Bank of America, but we need to go back and check all the numbers to make everything works out. and the premium is higher than expected. So, great. So we will go and check some numbers, and we'll be back in a few minutes.
Thank you. Very good. That's pretty good stuff.
There's a happy Secretary of Budget over there.
Yeah, well, he's. We're going to have a little more money. Good work. So,
well, we'll see.
They said a couple of minutes. Should we get back into this?
And then we'll come back with.
Should we do another question? Or,
yeah.
Sure. If we could call the school system back up.
Christine, you got it.
Great. So, let me just pick up. Historically, the for-profit companies that we pay money to for these assessments utilize Maryland teachers to write test items. Are they going to contract with Maryland teachers as they as these groups have done in the past? What is the plan for the utilization of so-called artificial intelligence? Will that replace the use of teachers in scoring the tests, since so many Maryland teachers are able to supplement their incomes historically, but I'm concerned with this company that we're doing something different.
Sure. Teachers have historically been involved in our standard setting process and assisting with item development. They have not scored our previous assessments, so they will not be scoring these assessments either. That has traditionally been left up to the vendor. In terms of the artificial intelligence, that is something we have used in some of our other assessments in the past, and we would never move forward with artificial intelligence scoring without being absolute certain that it is valid and reliable. In this particular contract, we have written it in a way that it is an option, so we can proceed with both the hand scoring and the AI simultaneously, and we would never exercise that option until we got to a point where we thought it was absolutely reliable.
Yeah, because here's what's going on around the country. You guys may not be aware of it, but you should be aware of it. These companies are now hiring people on Craigslist to come in and score these tests. They're not using the folks in the state that are A, educators, and B, people that are familiar with state. They're going to temp agencies. That's what Measured Progress did in Oklahoma. Went out and hired Kelly Services. So, I just question the whole structure right now of the organization that you're bringing in, and I urge the hiring of out-of-state test scores with highly questionable qualifications on Craigslist rather than qualified and experienced educators. I hope your testimony is that that's not going to be allowed, or did you state that that is a possibility if you review it and see that you want to do that?
I will certainly take a look at it. I took a look at the contract. I'm looking to see if our... Doug Strader, our director of assessment, is here, and he can speak to the.
Are you aware of the Oklahoma situation with Measured Progress, the company you're asking us to sign off on, they did with Kelly Services?
Yes, and our contract arrangement with Measured Progress is very different in that, and that is structured that MSD Maryland reviews all of our scores, and we send folks out to the scoring centers to make sure they're following appropriate protocols, which also includes hiring practices. So Maryland has a much tighter grip on our assessment program than some of the other states do. So in this particular situation, because of the gravity of attaching high school graduation requirements to this, we hold the scores to a very high standard in Maryland. And you also had a question regarding the AI scoring. Do you wish to address that?
Yeah, please.
As well? Okay. AI is artificial intelligence. Also, in our realm, we call that automated scoring. It's the use of computers to help score extended constructed response items. Within this particular bid and with the high school assessments in particular, we're very conservative of the use of that technology because of the high-stakes natures of these assessments. So, therefore, we included in this contract as an option. The benefits to AI scoring include cost savings, potentially, as well as the turnaround time for the assessments. So if you wish to leverage AI, you can turn around your results almost instantaneously if you have them computer scored. However, at the high school level...
We're going to stop you right there. Just pause for 1 second, and we're going to finish up this whole process.
Do we have to go back to this... Do we have to go back to the item to read?
Well, we're on item one. I mean, yes.
Item one.
Item one.
And the secretary is
agenda. Don't read the plans under item one as you make your
So, if we're back at item one for a moment.
Item one.
Governor, I move that the board adopt the resolutions before us today concerning the state and local facilities loan of 2017, first series in particular. I move that the board ratify and approve the preliminary official statement dated February 24, 2017, the summary notices of sale for the 2017 first series A, B, and C bonds published in the Bond Buyer on February 24, 2017, and the resolutions adopted by the board on February 8, 2017 with respect to the bonds, and would ask for a second and a vote on the motions.
Is there a second on the motion?
Second.
I vote aye.
That's unanimous.
3-0.
Secondly, I move that the Bank of America Merrill Lynch be declared the successful bidder for the first Series A tax-exempt bonds in the aggregate principal amount of $575 million, subject to resizing as provided in the official notice of sale, with a net premium of $91,424,169.17, and a true interest cost of 2.834242%. And I further move that the first Series A bonds be issued in the resized amounts and maturities and at the interest rates and prices set forth in the successful bid for the bond, and would ask for a second and a vote on the first Series A motion.
Is there a second?
Second.
Vote? 3-0.
And secondly, I move that Wells Fargo Bank National Association be declared the successful bidder for the first Series B taxable bonds in the aggregate principal amount of $100 million, subject to resizing as provided in the official notice of sale with a discount of $140,983 and a true interest cost of 2.029999%. And I further move that the first Series B bonds be issued in the resized amounts and maturities and at the interest rates set forth in the successful bid for the bonds. And would ask for a second and a vote.
Is there a second on that
second
motion? Vote is 3-0.
And finally, Governor, almost finally, penultimately, I move that the Bank of America Merrill Lynch be declared the successful bidder for the first Series C tax-exempt refunding bonds in the aggregate principal amount of $470,890,000, subject to resizing as provided in the official notice of sale, with a net premium of $72,709,006.95 and a true interest cost of 1.717277%. And I further move that the first Series C bonds be issued in the resized amounts and in the maturities and at the interest rate set forth in the successful bid for the bonds, and ask for a second and a vote on.
Is there a second?
Second.
3-0.
And finally, Governor, I move that the board authorize and approve the issuance of the final official statement for the bonds, and ask for a second and a vote.
Second.
3-0.
Thank you. This was a really good sale. It shows
really
that
good.
People are looking for stability and a good conservative investment in very volatile times, and see, Maryland is exactly that.
Great work. Again, I want to thank your staff for all their hard work, and thank everybody that helped put us in a position where we were so attractive to the bond companies. And I think we have a little more of a premium than we were expecting. Is that right, Mr. Secretary?
17 million more.
17 more than we were hoping for.
Christian Lund, Bernadette Bennett, among others who have been the leaders.
Let's bring them back in for a second and give them a round of applause. Is it? They just made us a lot of money. So thank you. Thank you very much. So we'll get back to the comptroller's questions.
Sure.
We were kind of in mid
no.
answer there.
Very
good. Okay, back to item 2 of the TV decision, Christy Michael.
Yeah, we should do this more often because we just made $17 million, most of which will go to education, I'm sure. So I have heard considerable concerns from teachers about how these tests that we're voting on today, what exactly the transition will be. According to your department, quote, a science test will be administered in 2018. However, because of the delay in the initiation of the contract, there may have to be either partial or entire reuse of old forms. Is that old curriculum?
No. What we're referring to in old forms, as part of the sunsetting of the existing contract, if you the numbers for fiscal year 16, we actually move forward with the building and construction of those forms to allow for this transition. So by old forms, we mean forms that were developed in a prior vendor. They would be new forms that students haven't seen yet. But again, we've prepared for this transition just in case this particular situation would occur. That way, the seamless to our stakeholders, it would be seamless to our stakeholders.
Okay, so for students who no longer take a standalone course in biology, are they going to just get a recycled biology test from on the old forms?
So currently, the last administration for the biology test would be this summer under the existing contract. What we would look to is the current goal is to field test the new science items for both January as well as in the spring administration of the HSA, where students will be held accountable for participating, not necessarily passing, as we introduce this new test. With the scope of the new contract, we still feel confident that we will be able to continue with that. But after we get through this part, we're going to go through our kickoff meetings with our vendors. And if need be, we do have that plan B to fall back on if need be. But meanwhile, we do believe we can still address the scope of the contract as is.
Right, but you understand the concern that students take a test that no longer matches their curriculum.
Within the next generational science standards, the standards that are included within the biology test now are also infused within those other standards. So there's not a direct disconnect there between what was administered before and what will be administered.
But why then should it be on an advisory basis? Why don't you just go ahead and implement it?
We are looking to do that, sir. But just in case, if we do run into issues, we do have a plan B to fall back on, because we are required to administer a science test through the feds. We are required to report and administer a science test during each administration. So we want to make sure that we cover all of our bases and make sure we're doing what's best for our kids. So we will adhere to the scope of the contract, and our intention fully is to move forward with the field test as planned, and we believe we can do so. But just in case, we do have a fallback plan, which includes the use of those forms that were developed.
So let me just leave the issue of the teachers and the students aside. And by the way, I noticed the teachers' union, which generally supports me, so I'm not a critic of them, have this testing issue as a priority. I never hear from them on these huge tens of millions of dollars that we pay to these out-of-state companies to engage in these tests. So if anybody from MSTA is listening, I'd love to get their point of view on them, because it's their position, and I think I agree with it, that there's too much testing and too little teaching. But given that, let me just get back to the contract here. Because this particular company, Measured Progress, according to media reports, they just lost their contract to develop similar tests in Nevada, largely due to suffering low scores in the, quote, demonstrated competence category by the state of Nevada, which, well, I like Nevada, but I'm not sure they are one of the top three states in education like we are. But they fired these guys for demonstrated, I guess, incompetence. What do you say to that? I mean, really? Seriously, you're asking us to commit $56 million to a company that, of all states, Nevada just fired.
Sure, and I think our contract is probably structured differently than Nevada, and we have a team that will monitor the contract and ensure that anything that we are required to receive or services they're required to provide will be provided. So we did get three bids on this contract, and they ranked second technically. The first ranked bid was significantly more expensive than this contract. So we thought, for the best interest of everyone involved, that we would go with the second-ranked technical proposal, which we do feel can absolutely do this work and save a significant amount of money.
Yeah, so Measured Progress is paying Nevada $1.3 million because 70% of the 214,000 students couldn't even take the test. The whole program crashed. So I guess you should at least be aware of that. And I also understand North Dakota is seeking compensation to account for technical glitches it experienced while administering their test. And in Montana, similar issues caused them to make their 2015 Measured Progress test optional. Have you spoken to other states about the company's past work, including Nevada, Montana, and North Dakota education officials, about their performance problems in those states?
Yes, we are aware of the issues in the other states.
And what is your response to that?
We do have concerns in some of these areas that you're highlighting here. But again, the issue was going through the procurement process, the difference in cost between the number one technical and the number two, we just knew our focus was going to have to be to the contract itself. Go with Measure Progress, as well as devote our staff and our time to ensure that this program is administered without a hitch.
Yeah, but here's the point about procurement. It's not just the low bid. It's the transparency of the process so that we don't award contracts to companies that have situations like this occur in other states, even if they are the low bidder. I mean, we often are asked by agencies to look well beyond the low bid. And in this instance, I certainly would, because you possibly risk disruption of these tests based on what's occurred in other states. And how do you expect us to protect the taxpayers and the teachers and the students in the event that this group isn't capable of fulfilling their end of the deal?
Well, as we researched those other states, there were other variables which contributed to the issues that Measure Progress had
what
in those states.
Other
vendors were part of that work. Some of it was related to their platform. Some of it was related to handoff and items to a different platform than the platform that they proposed to us. And what do I mean by platform? That's the administrative platform that students actually engage to take the test. They presented a product called iTester to us, of which is not being used in two of those other states. They were using a different platform vendor, and the problem was some of those items weren't rendering in that other subcontractor's environment. So we did look at some of those issues. So we are confident that we can make this happen. But is there additional risk with going to the second technical? Yes, there is, and we do need to pay close attention to that. But we do feel confident that we can, that this will work, that we can meet the contract obligations here.
Well, I'm just a lonely vote in search of another one, but I would vote no on this because not only is there the larger issue of is testing now such a fetish with us, apparently justified by the federal government asking us penalizing us if we don't do it. Hello, has anybody noticed what's happened in Washington recently? There is no way the U.S. Department of Education, and I disagree with the whole situation over there, but there is, it's strange credulity that somebody is going to come in and penalize the state of Maryland if we choose not to do these tests this year.
And just to be clear, with this particular contract, one of the assessments is required by the feds, and that's the science piece. The other piece is the government assessment, which is required by state legislature here.
Well, that's just rich. That is just really good. Yeah.
I can't throw the feds under the bus entirely on this one.
Yeah, I really think we should put this off and take a deep breath. And there are people that are commissioning these investigations and reviews of this testing, but we've gone so overboard in this.
Is there some sense of urgency with this that is going to change things? Are we still, if we could take this matter under consideration,
would we somehow
miss the testing and lose the funding? Or?
Well, we need to continue with the January administration for this assessment, so the timeline is getting very tight there.
2 weeks? What would that be?
2 weeks.
Oh, I'd be happy to move for 2 weeks. I would appreciate it. I'd be grateful because at least it would give the legislature and the federal government a chance to tell us whether, in fact, we could possibly substitute something this year. And
I'll second that motion.
Thank you.
Governor, let me say, I think we have to go ahead. I don't have a question about that. I would like, however, to see in writing from you the questions that have arisen, the problems that have arisen with the vendor you chose, and your response in terms of how you are going to avoid those problems in Maryland. And as far as government's concerned, I think what we need more than anything right now are good courses in government and civics, and everybody, including the adults, studying. So I don't share the skepticism about government at all.
If I may, I know if Dr. Sim is here, she would say that when the government assessment went away a few years ago, we saw a drop or decline in activity. And when it was reinstated by the General Assembly a few years ago, we really saw kids starting to take their government courses seriously again.
Yeah, well, but next time you're negotiating an automobile loan and getting yourself in unbelievable hot water, come and talk to me, because that's the issue that we're letting our kids down. And, you know, yes, thank you. If they are told where State Circle is, I'm all for that. But as far as a graduation requirement, it's just laughable that that is put up on the same level as financial literacy, which all of us desperately need. And
does it irritate me? Disagreeing 100%.
Okay, that's fine.
So
I'm happy to have.
We can disagree.
That's why we need a government.
Financial literacy and government. I happen to have a major in government. I think it's a good thing to study. But I think financial literacy is really important also. Yeah. There's a motion on the floor that we delay this for 2 weeks. It's been seconded. All those in favor say aye. All those opposed? Didn't get which side of that one you were on.
No,
you're okay. So the motion carries unanimously.
We'll defer it until the next meeting. And in fact, the item in front of you was to start the contract on April 1st. Already we had built in the 2 or 3 weeks. So we're okay with the contract.
Great.
So,
are there any other questions on the DBM agenda? Is there a motion?
Move approval.
Second. 3-0. Now we're going to go to university systems. Good morning, Joe.
Good morning. Joe Evans, representing the University System of Maryland. We have one item on the agenda.
One item. University. Any questions?
Move approval.
Second. 3-0. Thank you. Now we're going to move on to the information technology agenda, and I want to welcome our acting secretary, Mike Leahy, who had the misfortune of having his very first day on the job. He had to come before the Board of Public Works. So I hope we have some very tough questions. Are there any?
Good morning, Governor, Madam Treasurer, and Mr. Comptroller. For the record, I am Michael G. Leahy, the Acting Secretary of the Department of Information Technology. Today we have 3 items on your agenda, and I have agency representatives here to answer any questions you may have. And thank you for the introduction, Governor.
Well, welcome aboard. Any questions on do it?
Move approval.
Darn, you got off the hook this time. 2 weeks, we're going to have some fun for us. Welcome.
Thank you.
Thank you. 3-0 on do it. Move on to transportation.
Good morning, members of the board. For the record, I'm Keith Ron. I am the Secretary of the Maryland Department of Transportation. MDOT has 7 items for your consideration today. Item 8GM is being removed.
Okay. Any questions on Department of Transportation? Is there a motion?
Move approval.
3-0. We're going to move on to DGS.
Good morning, Governor. I'm Treasurer Mr. Comptroller. For the record, I'm Alan Patricio, Secretary for General Services. Department has 20 items on our agenda today. We are withdrawing item 20, LT, and we'll be glad to answer any questions you have.
It's got a big list today, 20 items. Any questions on DGS? Is there a motion?
Move
second. 3-0. This concludes the Board of Public Works. Thank you for joining us, and congratulations on the bond sale, Madam Treasurer. We can make $17 million every day.
Yeah, good job.
Getting out
there. Can we put it in the rainy day fund?
Sounds good.
Well, it needs less general.
Okay.
Good job. Thank you. Your team did a good job. I didn't know. I didn't know about that. The whole basic ladder. I knew all about that.
I'll say, you have to prove it.
Yeah.